Hi, and welcome to Parent Talk hashtag with Bev. Today, I am joined by some guests who will introduce themselves in this podcast as we discuss the difference between state school, independent and private schools. This will be a very long podcast, which I have then I've decided to divide into a part one and part two. Very interesting conversations from people who work or have children in boarding schools, private schools, independent schools. So listen up, and we hope that you learn a few things from this discussion.
And I'm joined by some people who have experience in that area. If you'd like to introduce yourselves, that would be great.
So hi, my name's P. I had a son in state school. I've worked in state schools and I've worked in private schools as well.
Mm-hmm. And who would like to go next? Go on. Yeah.
Okay. My name is Red. I have and currently work in the independent school sector.
Okay. Thank you. Go on, Em.
Hi, my name is Em. I am a parent of some children in the private school sector.
Mm-hmm. And R?
Hi, I am R, and I have been to a private school and a state school. And I currently work for an organisation that gets young people into private schools.
Right. And I'm your host. You all know me in one way or another. I'm a mum. I've worked in state schools and colleges. My children have gone to state school and one has gone to boarding. I've worked with parents whose children we've supported to go into independent and private schools, as well as parents who are in the state school. So the reason we're here is because we wanted to have a really interesting conversation about state school versus private school. So can I start, Em? What made you decide to send your children to, an independent private school? Can you give us a little bit of background of how that happened?
My children started off in state school, but because mm-hmm. of the environment that they were growing up in, I chose to seek another sort of school for them, because I was in I don't know how to explain it. The environment that we were in was very dangerous, and mm-hmm. I didn't want my children to go to school in that environment.
And I think for me it was an opportunity. It presented itself as an opportunity for my child to go. And because she was older, it meant she was 16. So she'd already done the GCSE stage in a state school and now could do A-levels in a private sort of boarding. And we got that opportunity. And I was thinking, well, class of 30 versus a class of maybe, 15, might be better for her, so I was, it was an opportunity that I thought, why not? Most of the parents, or most of us, we think of independent schools, and when you think of them, you think of Eton, Cambridge, and their universities, but there are private schools, and you think they're getting so much more, and it's better than what we've got in state schools, so why not send our kids there? They'll get a better education, I suppose. Do you think that that's a right synopsis as why some of us decide to do that?
I do believe it is the reason some of us do choose to do that, but it also creates opportunity for the children. As I said, the environment for us was very dangerous, and like you, we had the opportunity to. We worked hard to create that opportunity for my children, and with God's blessing and grace, we managed to get there.
So what do other people think? What were their perceptions of, because a couple of you work in that or have worked in that environment, and we've got one person who's lived in it. So what do you think?
I was thinking for my son, he didn't go to private school. We went to a state school. And I think it's really individual, like what you know your child and you know what environment they need to be in. The state school was a very small state school in comparison to maybe other state schools, and the teachers really knew him. So I thought that that was really important. But on the flip side, I worked in private education and could see how much, like I think Em said, more opportunities. The education, the standards were much higher. There was less behavioural difficulties within the classroom. Like you said, smaller class sizes. So yeah, it was, yeah, there's swings and roundabouts to both, I think, as well. Because again, my son had SEN needs, and I don't think in private school they do very well with that. So in a sense, he got other opportunities that I was able to give him, like, you know, extracurricular stuff. But I know in private schools, not all, but particularly the ones I've worked in, maybe he wouldn't have thrived in that environment.
Interesting. I think there's an assumption or there's a stereotype that the independent schools have a lot more money. And so because they have a lot more money, they've got a lot more opportunity. And so it's strange to hear that, you know, because your son had a SEN needs, that you didn't think that the private independent schools would meet that need.
Yeah. And I've seen it, you know, I've seen firsthand experience of children who, yeah, their parents are, you know, quite wealthy, but the teachers are supposed to be, the policy is that teachers are supposed to be trained to work with SEN children. But unfortunately in private schools, some teachers don't even have a degree, actually, you know, and... What? Yeah, you don't have to actually have a degree to work in a private school.
No, sorry. I mean, coming from a state perspective, you know, when they're going through the interviews and you're trying to make sure that everybody's qualified to do, you're telling me that in the private independent, they don't have to have a degree to, you're not in your head. Is that the truth?
Wow. Red?
Is that the truth? You're working currently in one?
Yes, I think so. I think it's a reflection of colleagues who've been there a very long period of time, in which case at the time that they were recruited, having a degree was not a requirement. So then now in modern day, you need to have one, but they've now been there for 15 years, 20 years, and they are very much ingrained into the system. But also, I think I can echo what P is saying about the SEN adjustments and needs. I don't think it's something that is available in independent schools because they simply don't have although they have the resources, that's not where their cash cow is. So that's not where they're focusing their income. And for an independent school to give that type of support, it would take many members of staff in order to do that. Whereas it's just not a priority. And I think that's definitely something I can echo and something that I can say does happen.
No, yeah. You see, to me, right, if I'm paying, no, sorry, how much does your school charge per term?
We charge £10,000 per term.
A term is 12 before, weeks.
There are three terms, and that is before you've included the sports kit, because you need to own the sports kit in order for that to happen. The trips that happen throughout the year, so there's and skiing, which happens in February, and if you board, which some of our girls do, then you obviously have to pay boarding fee, which is an extra £6,000 to £10,000 depending on where they're boarding, so independent room or sharing with a friend, and of course you've got to factor in food in that cost and things like that. So yeah, it's a pretty penny per term. It, you know, quite easily could be 20,000, and that's just, you know.
So in one year, you could spend 60K?
Yes, and that's if you have just one child at our school. So we take them from when they're wee, from when they're, you know, four, right up until they're 18. And then if you have another girl that goes there, then the fees start all over again.
So, yeah,
it's quite expensive.
When you said cash cow, I was going to ask you what you meant, but I can see.
Yeah.
The children are the cash cows.
Definitely. And then if you have a learner that has an SEN need for a member of staff, you're taking 6 or 7 members of staff to cater to that one child's needs, but that one child may not be with you from 3 till 18. They might actually go somewhere else, in which case it's not worth the school investing in that one individual, whereas they could spread that cost across a class of 12, let's say.
Just to add into that, because one of the schools that I was working in, everything that Red said is actually very true. And what they did with this particular child, they said for him to remain in the school, he would need one-to-one support. Mm-hmm. So the parents had to pay, and it was full-time from he got there until he left. He had to have one-to-one support. So in addition of the fees, the parents had to also pay for that LSA to support their child to remain in that school.
Yeah. But then I think as has been echoed by many, people think that it's a better opportunity at the end. So they pay the money in order for the outcome to be better, to have better opportunities in terms of employment and connection. And mm-hmm. to that, there is also an element of truth. I mean, quite a lot of the parents at our school have very influential roles in society. And so you're paying for your child to be affiliated and associated with a minister's child or someone who's a CEO's child. And that connection happens from childhood.
I'm hearing here is that education is not the thing. It is the connections and opportunities that you're paying for.
Yes.
Am I being too, am I cutting it down too sharp? You understand? Rah. That is an eye opener because, somebody, a parent I was talking to whose child is at boarding has recently, been selected to go boarding because academically they're able to. But they have an SEN. And I think one of the issues that probably came up was because you've had state school experience, you have, as a parent, you have an expectation that the private school will do the same thing as state schools do. And therefore it becomes a problem when the private school doesn't act like the experience you've had of a state school. Trying to get your head around that as a parent from a state, state school, where they have all these policies about, special education need and, money is poured in from the government into state schools, what they call it, the pupil premium.
Yeah.
Pupil premium, postcode lot, postcode lottery. If you live in a postcode, you get extra money sent into the school in order to help you with those opportunities that or needs that you may have. So the school can pull down money in order to assist. So if you need an SAL or a teacher's assistant in the class, schools are creative, state schools can be creative in the way in which they use that money to ensure that the child is not excluded but included.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that's the reality, like I said. So each child is very different. But if you understand the educational system, like you said, there are some outstanding state primary schools that go above and beyond and create so many opportunities for their children and have inclusivity in terms of SEN, SENCOs who are really outstanding, teaching assistants and teachers who are passionate about the work that they do. Mm. And so those children are thriving in those environments. Mm. So like you said, it is this kind of, and it's not to say that the private sector or the independent schools, their level of education is high, the expectation is high. And it's like Red said, because you are dealing with influential people. So the standard is high. But even then, when they're going to independent school, their parents are still paying for private tuition on top of that on top of the education already. They're already in that, you know, they're kind of like, what's the word? They're kind of above their peers anyway, in terms of just being in that sector, but still parents are still willing to give more money for them to have extra tuition on top of being at an independent school.
I mean, what you're saying is giving me a lot of food for thought, because, you know, my mum, right, when she came to the UK, right, she didn't understand the education system, but she did understand that, you know, education was important, right? And she wanted, you know, they didn't know about best schools back then. You know, it's like the local school was where you went, and whatever the local school was giving you, you know, you make the best of it. Yeah. Parents that are grown up in my generation, you know, who've been through the state, they're like, well, actually, I just want to pay and send my child to a private school, because the problems I had at state school, then my kids aren't going to have in a private independent school. Is that the truth, though?
I feel like I'm talking a lot, but no, because the thing is, like Red said, even within the private and independent schools, there is a hierarchy. You know, there is this thing of people want to be affiliated. People know whose children, you know, like you said, they're working in government, they're working in very powerful and influential places. And so even within that environment, there is exclusion. There are people, you know, in terms of even just for parties and things like that. And like I said, with that SEN child, he was pretty much excluded from his peers.
I mean, one of the parents that, you know, because, all right, so I used to work for a charity, and part of my role as a family school liaison officer, there was scholarship opportunities for these young boys who were bright, but because of the places that they lived, or, you know, they wouldn't have been able to get some of the opportunities, although they've gone to private. We helped them to apply for private school, and they got in because they're academically bright and able. But I don't think parents were prepared, one, for the questions to come about, well, how did you get here, and where are your parents from, and what do your family do, and who are you connected to? They were also not prepared. I think the young people weren't prepared for the wealth that they saw. So I think one child, it was like made a friend with another child, as you do, because children just don't see the barriers like parents do. And then, you know, when this child was going off for the holidays, he was like, oh, we're going to, let's say, Spain, or not even Spain, let's say Monaco, going to Monaco for Christmas. Do you want to come? You know what I mean? And the kid was like, well, of course I want to come, but I know my mum and dad, or my mum, can't afford that. And then the family were like, oh, well, we'll pay for everything. Then what do you do? Because you want your child to have the opportunity, but at the same time, you don't want to necessarily feel like your pitney don't have, right? You know, when you, it's interesting that you're talking about you can be a part of but excluded because of certain things, you know, because you don't have that money, that disposable income. But I think one of the other things I saw was that because parents are paying that kind of money, I never really feel that they engage with their kids. It was the money. Oh, we'll take you on holiday. You can bring a friend and we're going to have a brilliant time, but you stay with your friends and we'll bring you back to England. Or not even, you know, holidays not being available for their kids, and their kids wanted to come to my parents' house to bring their kids and hang out with, because there was more of a family environment in the place where there was no money. I mean, do you have experiences of those things? Any of you? I mean, you know, you were in boarding. Do you think anything that they're saying here is contrary to what you've experienced?
I think I agree with some elements, especially with the previous comment that you just made about the type of relationships that young people have with their parents at boarding schools, for example. And I've experienced the same thing with regards to like people coming up to me and being like, oh my gosh, you have such a great relationship with your family, and like you guys do this and you guys do that, and I'm like, yeah. And then they're like, yeah, but we go to these amazing places, but like I never really have a good relationship with my mom, or she just always sends me back to boarding school and she's always busy and stuff like that. So I've definitely witnessed like what you spoke about firsthand. But with regards to what everybody has been discussing, like I've literally witnessed it all in the boarding school like space. And I think it's just like there's loads of elements of classism within those environments. And those can kind of express themselves also in like discrimination. And that can just be like not just socioeconomically, but even racially sometimes. And I think it's just all to do with how boarding and independent schools and the private education sector work, because they don't kind of have, let's say, Ofsted, for example, or they don't have the government to answer to. They can kind of determine like what they want their rules to be. So for example, one school that we work with at our charity, they don't allow certain pupils to go there unless they pay a certain amount. And also there's another thing about them that's really strange. It's like they only accept a certain caliber of student that has to meet this certain criteria. Otherwise they won't like have that student there, which I think is interesting, but that school's quite different to how other schools operate. And I think each school, definitely in the private sector, does things differently because they will have their own motives. Whereas what you find with state schools is there's that sense of standardization, but with that comes the misuse and misallocation of resources. So it seems like there's not enough. I don't know if anybody resonates with what I just said, but yeah, I think everything you guys are saying is stuff that I've seen.
I mean, on what R has said, P has said, and Red has said, as being a parent, having children in that environment and being approached by other parents who have influential. And my thing is, you don't need to know my business. I just tell them, well, you know, we're all in the same category, and I can kind of tell which ones are so stuck up that you just can't even talk to them about the everyday things, and I just keep my distance. But there are some really lovely parents that have been involved with us as a family, and my children have greatly, you know, appreciated that. But at the same time, there are some funny ones. You can tell by going to the meetings. Like they have these coffee mornings, I don't go, because all it is about is finding somebody new to chat about and have a gossip about. And you'll find that they always have their own WhatsApp group as well, although they have a school WhatsApp group, so they try and get all the parents involved. They also have a separate one for those who want to be chitty-chatty and gossiping. I tend to stay away from both and just stick to what the school actually has as a communication, a form of communication with parents. Again, I can totally associate and understand when it comes to a situation where your children are invited to go to certain places and you feel kind of uncomfortable, but the people that have invited us, I felt comfortable enough to say yes or no to, and feel comfortable enough to say that to whether they were in boarding school or in state school, because I don't try to be something I'm not. I try to just stay grounded, and I try to keep my children grounded to let them know that when they come home, we don't have that lifestyle, but we have each other. It's very difficult.
I mean, no, some of the parents that I know that I've worked with, I mean, one I'm thinking of in particular, you know, her son, very bright, sent off to boarding school, and not once did this family go and visit their child. And as black and white people, right, and I hate to sort of divide us in that kind of manner, but as black and white people, there is a different expectation, I suppose, you know, because these parents were fighting, they're black, and they were fighting so hard for their child to be able to go to this, for this experience. And I was like, yeah, you got, but you're going to have to support this child because they're going to be in an environment where they are the minority, even more of a minority from the school that they left, which was much more diverse. They're going to go now into a pool where they're going to be the one that stands out the most. And people's assumptions about where they've come. Oh, you've come from a rough part of London, innit? You must know people who are druggies. You must know people who have stabbing. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. And I was saying to the parents, you cannot leave the child in that environment on their own. You're going to have to make an effort to go in and support them. And we set up like a parent support group for some of them to come so they could talk about any issues that were coming up for them and their children in the school. Number one, they didn't attend those sessions. Only a few people did. And those are the ones who were going to, you know, follow their kids and make sure that they got a balance of, you know, this is who we are. Like you were saying, you know, this is who we are. We don't live that lifestyle, but we're here for the education and for the experience and for the opportunities that it might lead to. But you're there to actually, you know, do the best that you can, because the qualification you're going to get from this experience will begin to open doors for you. But this young man, he excelled in everything he was doing, and the parents never went to a parent day, parent consultation. They just left the child on his own. And I think it's really important for us. I mean, I didn't do that with mine. I left her alone, but we were in contact all the time. And when there were open days or things like that, I went down there to show that she wasn't on her own and that she came from somewhere. So I can't understand how you can just plot your child down somewhere, even if you're paying 60 grand a year, and not engage with them in that environment. Now, you go on, sorry.
No. I think for some parents, like the type of caliber of parents that are at those schools, you could argue that they generally don't have time. Like some of them are some of the most influential people in the country, or they're CEOs of businesses or whatever. And literally, because they can afford to, they send their children to those schools for the opportunity, but also for the teachers and staff to be that pastoral support for them when they're there. It's, I don't want to go down a cynical route, but it links to pre-colonial times, let's say, you know.
yeah.
You know, other people were looking after other people's children. And I think with boarding, I've seen that, like, I've grown house parents, even though I'm fully aware that I have a parent, but it's the house parent role is there because some children don't get the opportunity for their parents to come and attend, you know, what do you call them again? Meetings, school meetings, parents' evenings. Mm-hmm. And just to give you an example, I've got a lot of international friends, and their parents would never fly over to a parents' evening for an hour. Are you kidding me? A flight, but they have the money for it, but they wouldn't because they're somewhere overseas doing some sort of business and they might call the child every so often. So excuses can be made for either party, but I think that is something to consider as well, like the time and resource. And if that's even important to the parent, they'd probably send their child there because they don't have the time and they want the child to just get an education and be taken care of pastorally.
And you know, it's so exactly what R just said, because I remember, you know, every like system you work in, you do safeguarding. And I remember when I was doing safeguarding in the private school, and I was quite amazed, actually, the difference the safeguarding like officer, like he spoke about neglect. So he talked about exactly what we're just talking about here, you know, children who are boarding and you never ever see their parents. Like he spoke about one particular child that, whether it came to Christmas, he was always left at school. Easter, he was at school, everybody would go and he would stay. And they saw that as a real safeguarding, because it was like, he's never going home. But in a sense, his parents just didn't have the time for him. So that was flagged up in that system as a safeguarding issue, because it's neglect. You know, and then you've got the other parents who are almost mollycoddling. They're too involved. They're overly involved. It's,
look at Red's face.
Isn't it, Red, though? Don't you experience parents, like parents that are just
overbearing?
It's like you won't even allow the child the freedom to be a child and to make their own choices and things like that.
Mm.
And also as a parent, you do see that, you know, there's arrangements made for John to go and see Parker for the weekend, or if John's going to San Francisco and Parker's parents are not around to pick him up, John will be dropped off with Parker and then Parker will be like passed from pillar to post, different parents, yeah. Or even have a nanny at that age in secondary school to look after them. I was really surprised being as a parent, you know, from the parental side of what really happens. But as R said, it's time. They don't have the time. And it is...
So then why have to picnic them?
Well, it's about having a 2.4 family. It's about the covering all bases. And I have to say it like that because it's like you're expected to have children. And I've been in a situation where two parents have separated. And this was in a meeting, and one parent came in with their partner, and the single parent, which was a male, was like, "What's he doing here?" And his ex responded, "Well, that's none of your business." But it was a case of there was a lot of disgruntlement between them because they just didn't agree. Whatever terms they fell out on, I didn't even know them, which made it even worse. And to put in a situation like that, it was just ridiculous. But it just made me understand that the mother was trying to be more involved in the child's life, but the dad was separating the child from the mother as much as possible, but trying to be involved in more in school. And then he would actually act spitefully within the meeting not to agree with the mother because the mother was actually the chair of that meeting.
Oh God, it's a mess.
Oh, it was absolutely horrendous. I had to step away from the situation because it was just diabolical. And but I couldn't believe I was actually sitting in a meeting like this.
But the reality is, right, things that nasty stuff like that happens in state schools. You know what I mean? You know, outside the gate, you know, when I used to take my kids to school, they're much older now, but I remember back then, there were some parents you would stay away from because it was just like Dramaville. Everything was just a negative. You know, the school was crap, and even though they were there every single day and they were getting everything they could from the school, you know what I mean? You're going to meet that in either environment. I think, you know, it is about it's about my mindset. I can't talk about other people. It's about my mindset. And my mindset was, you know, if we're going to use the opportunity, I'm going to try and give balanced space for my child to discover and see certain things rather than, you know, try and live my life vicariously through her in a private setting. Because it doesn't work. But, you know, the other thing that is just like the elephant in this room is that, you know, there are Black children in those environments, and those schools, some of the schools, even the state schools, can't cope with Black students. But I have found, like, when we sent one boy off to a well-known private school, he was the only one in his class. And the teacher has decided that whatever book they were reading had loads of words like nigger, nigger, nigger in it. And the boy would come home to his mother and brought, basically, you know, she would say to me, you know, that there is an issue because he feels uncomfortable in that class. And the teacher has not taken into consideration that this boy might feel offended by that word. Right. And what should she do now if it was state school? You know, it's very clear the complaints procedure that you can go down, you know what I mean? But what is it like in independent and private schools, those of you who have that experience? I'm throwing it in the room. Bang. Remember, you're using aliases, so you can talk freely, man.
This is R speaking. I would say that I've experienced that. And the procedure, well, in this case, for the school that I went to, it was pretty similar to state school. but also the type of young person that I am. I literally stood up in the class and I was like, Miss, you know why you can't say this word? And then I gave her a whole history lesson. But basically what happens is you flag a complaint with the head, at this point, the head of sixth form, and then they have a meeting with you and the teacher, and then you come up with like a solution on what's happened. So it's kind of like peer mediation, but I know that that's not the same for all schools in the sector, but that was my experience. With some of the young people where I've heard some of their stories, there hasn't been any system put in place and sanctioning has just been completely inappropriate. So like one student, he was the only black boy in the whole year, and there was about 100 of them, and them, a few of his white counterparts were making jokes about him on eBay about how they're going to sell him and da da da. Like, it was basic racist jokes and stuff like that. And what happened is he went to his head teacher, he went to the school and told them, and they were like, well, this is not that serious of an issue. Like, it's not something like, oh, you know, you're being bullied or you've been hit or anything. It's just like probably a joke. And because you haven't come with any evidence, there's nothing that we can do to take this forward. And he just felt like he was completely done wrong. So he went to the boarding house, spoke to his house parents up there, and they were just like, I'm sorry that you're feeling this way, but there's nothing that we can do. And the perpetrator was literally sitting next to him in class, and there was no apology on that end. Mm-hmm. So for some students, it's the procedure. If it's not serious enough, some schools won't take it forward. And I think it just depends on the school that you go to.
What's serious though? Because what a word exactly. that you may say to me might be something that breaks me. You understand, especially if I'm feeling isolated.
I feel like from a teacher's perspective, not that I am one, but a lot of the issues are he say, she say. And so if there's no evidence, then it's like, I can't take this forward unless it's something where a student has actually hit someone, and you might have like receipts from stuff on social media if they've taken it to a big campaign, and then you can take it further. Like, for example, in my boarding school, there was a girl who at dinner, one of the Spanish students called her the N-word and then started hitting her. And we were all around, like even the teachers were sitting on the teacher's table, and we were like, no, like, what are you doing? And obviously, because she was speaking in Spanish, everyone was like, oh, she probably didn't mean it like that. But we were like, no, she was hitting her, and we know what the N-word sounds like, da, 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 da. And what happened was, which probably shouldn't have happened, but the whole boarding house went into a riot. Like, we started like smashing doors, da, 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 da. We got the girl, and we were like, you need to say sorry, you need to apologize, da, 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 da. Because the situation wasn't being dealt with on an authority level by teachers, we thought, no, we need to get both of them in the room and they need to apologize. But then eventually what happened is we had enough witnesses, and we went to the teachers and we said, this is where it's happened, this is what it is. She's very upset. We're very sure that this is what it meant. And then from there, they were able to make some change. But it really, that's what we'd be considered serious, when it becomes something that is not necessarily linked directly to race, but it's a mixture of bullying or harassment, or there's some sort of evidence that you can directly see. And kids nowadays, sadly, are really smart with the way that they discriminate against others. So it's really hard sometimes for teachers to be like, that's your word against their word. And I also think another interesting thing to have in your minds, food for thought, is sometimes some of these incidences are happening by teachers. We did a survey, our charity, and 38%, which some could say is low, but still is a lot, of just racial incidences were committed by teachers. And so when it's also a teacher-student relationship, it's like, well, we have this teacher, we employ this teacher, and this teacher's been here, like other people have said, this teacher's been here for so long, they surely haven't have said that to the child. And then it's the teacher's word against the child's word when it comes to sorting out sanctioning. So there's a whole range of issues to uncover. I see a lot of nodding, so I'm interested to see what people have to say about that.
We're all stunned in silence.
No, like, I agree with everything R just said. Like, you know, it's very, I think Red said it, I think, interestingly enough, and maybe it happens in state schools as well, I do think it does happen in state schools, but particularly in private schools, there are members of staff who have, they are like prehistoric. They have been there way too long. And they are part of the problem because they haven't, they have a mindset and they want it to be the status quo. They don't want to move it. They don't want to change it. It's always been like this. And I think one experience that I had when I was at a private school was I was in the staff room and I was just getting my lunch and there was members of staff sitting at the table talking. And I was just not even really listening to them. And then I just heard one of the staff members say, oh yeah, something about a party. I couldn't really, but I just heard, yeah, they dressed up as KKK. So I was kind of like, did I just hear what I just thought? And then like I turned around and he kind of looked at me, but started laughing. So anyway, I kind of parked it because I didn't, you know, don't want to kind of go into all of that. I'm new here. I don't want to start bringing out the race card. Anyway, cut to maybe 3-4 months later, we were in the park where the children like do PE in the park. So a little Asian boy was sitting on the ball and he doesn't like PE. He really hated it. This same teacher walked over to the boy and kicked the ball from underneath him and he fell on the floor. So the boy is obviously distressed and crying. So I go over to kind of comfort him. And this teacher then says to me, oh, you know, I hope, you know, or what's wrong with him? And I said, you know what's wrong with him. You know exactly what you did. You kicked the ball from underneath him. And he said, oh, I didn't mean it like, and I said, no, you did mean it like that. And he said, oh, well, I hope you don't, you know, get a bad impression of me. I said, I do have a bad impression of you, actually. I heard what you said in the staff room that time. And he said, oh, no, no, no. What do you mean? And I said, you said something about someone dressing up as KKK. And he goes, oh, no, that was just my son going to a party.
Oh, my gosh.
So he actually admitted it. So in the end, anyway, I then reported it. I just thought, I have to report this. This is out, you know, but long story short, the school didn't do very much about it. They were aware. And this individual, I got to find out that even people, the public, had seen his conduct and had rang the school to say, this, I witnessed this staff member in the park doing this. And yet he still didn't go.
I mean, Red, I remember a conversation we had where you were saying that some of your students did some massive demonstration to have a party, not a party, they wanted a meeting without the teachers there for Black students, because they felt that there wasn't anything, that a space where they could talk just for themselves. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I think that I agree with a lot of what's been said about the reason that these institutions are not racially aware. I think P hit the nail on the head, that they are people who have been there for a really long period of time and they're not willing to change, or they don't know how to change. And I think R raises the point that actually teachers are 90% of the time the problem. And even to your example of the reading of the book, that is, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to realize that that's just inappropriate. But what happens is that the teachers don't want to make the change because it's easier to just go with the status quo that they've always done it. And there's no desire to ruffle any feathers and to actually deal with the problem. I would like to add, though, definitely from my experience in independent sectors, is that the reason that these institutions don't want to make the change and the reason they don't make the change is because this is maybe in the last 10 years, the first wave of other races entering into the independent sector. Right. So this has always been happening, but we were not there and they didn't have to deal with us. Yeah. So the example of the one Black boy in the whole year, they may have never seen a Black boy in real life. in touching distance. And of course, the school could have dealt with the whole idea of him being put up for sale is a racial, it's a racial act. There's no other way to interpret it. But the idea of not dealing with it is because there are probably other levels of banter that go on within the school where certain things happen. And prior to the school that I'm in now, I was in an independent boys' school. And of course, the majority was white, but we had girls in sick form, and a girl walked past in a very conservative uniform, as in to her knees, could have been a nun kind of outfit. And the boys saw the girl walk past and said, "That's bangable," as she went past. Wow. And so this is the behavior of a 17-year-old boy to a 16-year-old girl who was, although it makes no difference, not providing any provocation whatsoever. And yet he still mentally felt that that was someone he could dominate, because they had never had girls. They had never interacted with them in the classroom, in that social space. So there is an element of ignorance and not wanting to deal with it, but also race not being something that's highlighted because they don't have that diversity within the schools. And with the group, the example is that the group wanted to have a space. They formed their own BAME society and did not want specific members of staff to attend, because they felt that these members of staff, these are girls who'd been in the school for years, felt that these members of staff had been specifically racist to them. There's no other word for it. And they were now at an age where they could pinpoint that that's what it was. Whereas before, you just think, well, sir doesn't like me, or miss doesn't pick me for this particular project. But now I think young people are more aware and more articulate about the issues that are affecting them and how they want them to be dealt with. So the schools will have to make the change. However, I think the really important thing to take away is that these independent schools and private schools are very closed environments, very closed. Of course, there is no Ofsted, there is no regulation. And we, as our school, for example, we are rated as in Tatler magazine. That's where you're going to find us. Right. So if Tatler puts us in our top five, it really doesn't matter what happened in the classroom, because we're going to get a Royal's Child. We're going to get whoever, because we're in that list, because there's no Ofsted, there's nobody else to check us.
Yeah.
And the kid who comes from the ethnic minority, to make it really wide, whatever that ethnic minority is, their complaint will not have as much weight as the parent who isn't a member of a royal family. And if that royal family child doesn't complain, well, it's all good. You know, if that CEO's child doesn't complain, then it's perfectly fine. So our voices are not being heard loud enough, but also they've never had to interact with us in the first place, and therefore they're not necessarily taking our complaints as warranted.
So this or what they'll do is they'll say their comments and then resign.
Hi, we've had to stop it there. The discussion is getting more and more juicy as people begin to open up, but we're going to have to make part two. So thank you for listening, and we hope that you've picked up a few gems from this conversation, and you know, put your timer on to be alerted when part two comes out, which I'm sure we will continue to have some interesting debate. Until then, I want to thank you for listening. Please like and share, and we will see you on the other side. Until then, stay safe and be blessed.